All right, we are live. Detroit Lions Collective, every single Wednesday at 6 p.m. We are back. I am Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. We got Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and, of course, Will Birchfield. He seems like – is he at Comerica? I can't – no, he's not. He's not.
No, I'm at the Fox 2 sports office right now. Actually, you can catch me on the Fox 2 live stream beginning at 7 o'clock as soon as this finishes off. So I'm kind of just everywhere, boys. You know how it is.
I love it. Everywhere but home.
Five episodes and three.
I haven't seen my wife and kid in 6 weeks, ever since this started.
Oh, yeah. He is actually everywhere but home, but he still finds way. He's here.
I'm actually homeless.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the rumors. You know, it is what it is. But we have lots to get to today because last week we previewed the Packers game. You know, the vibes were high. You know, the vibes were high. We're talking about the Packers, just kind of what to expect for fans, what we kind of expect. Now we have a result. From Sunday, we have a result. The Lions did not show up. I don't even think they – I didn't even look like the same Lions team remotely close that we've seen at all over the last couple of years. Probably the – no, actually, it is the worst loss with this much talent, probably since that Ravens road loss that they suffered to Lamar Jackson. It was devastating. You guys obviously had to cover it. I covered it on our YouTube – on my YouTube channel. We'll get our initial reactions to that, and then we'll get to the Bears later in the show. But what's just kind of a couple days removed from whatever the heck that was on Sunday?
I think at some level you just have to take it as week one, you know, a week one anomaly. And, you know, I keep looking at the roster and waiting for some void to appear that, you know, we might have missed. And clearly – Frank Ragnow is missed. That's of note and something that the Lions are going to have to grow and adjust to, you know, going forward. But there's still so much talent on this roster, so much of it returning from a 15-win team a year ago, an NFC conference champion on the doorstep of the Super Bowl 2 years ago. And so, you know, I think we kind of set the table for Green Bay being a quality team last week, and they proved that. They proved more week one ready, but you know, there's not much you can do other than get better and move on.
Yeah, I was a little worried about this game in some ways, just because the new coordinators and whatnot. But I think I kept coming back to, okay, this team has handled the pressures of Lambeau in recent years. They've got the talent. They've kind of had the Packers number. So it's like, in some ways, I thought it'd be a good matchup. And then Micah Parsons, we didn't know how effective he would be in, you know, a bit of a snap count, which ended up not being much of a snap count because he still played a lot. So, yeah, I mean, going into a game like that, you're like, okay, maybe you can catch them off guard, switch things up a little bit because you have kind of an element of surprise to new coordinators. They kind of did a lot of things they've done, at least defensively, a lot of man coverage, a lot of blitzing. And then offensively, there's just poor execution, lack of communication, the fundamentals that Campbell talked about. That stuff wasn't there. That's not really characteristic of what we've known of these Lions under Dan Campbell over the years. So, yeah, it looked different. I don't know if you can blame it all on scheme, as some people are doing. I think they're sort of taking what the defense gave them. Jeff Hafley does a really good job over there with what he does. And being able to win with four without blitzing, I think is huge. You add a guy like Mike Parsons into that equation, it gets a whole lot easier, right? So, probably some things they weren't expecting, but hey, they got beat. The better team won, and I think that was pretty evident on Sunday.
Yeah, considering the holes that the Lions are trying to fill both on the sideline and the offensive line, I don't know if there could have been a more daunting matchup in week one than on the road at Lambeau against a team that just added one of the three best pass rushers in the NFL and against a defense that is uniquely equipped to challenge your offense with their ability, as Colton referenced, to mostly penetrate by rushing four and then to drop seven into coverage and to be able to play pretty much too high safety the whole game to take away the threat of those explosive plays for the Lions. It's just interesting. I wonder how things go on Sunday. If the Bears at home had been the week one matchup, if we'd be having a much different conversation about this team and about this team's readiness now. But the reality is, they were out-muscled and they were out-manned and they were frankly out-maneuvered, certainly in the first half from a schematic standpoint, in a way that we haven't seen. I'd echo your point, Jeff, since the Ravens game back in 2023. It was jarring watching them in the first half struggle wholeheartedly to try and run the ball in particular. And watching the Packers defense make contact with Lions ball carriers in the backfield on 16 of their 22 rushing attempts was unlike anything that any of us have witnessed watching this Lions offense for 3 to 4 years now. So certainly a challenging matchup that exposed some holes that hopefully serve the Lions down the road.
Alternatively, Will, if they opened up against the Bears at home and lost a game with that defense missing the pieces they were and with Caleb doing Caleb things, this conversation might actually be worse somehow.
Yeah, there's no denying that. I think the biggest surprise for me watching that game on Sunday was, number one, just the lack of urgency and energy. Usually you see that every single week from a Dan Campbell, especially week one. That's, I feel like week one, I heard, I forgot what former NFL player said this, but it's a great point. Week one is the game or the week that you don't even need to get ready for. It's week one of the NFL season. Like, that should just come naturally. It's the start of football. And it just seemed like the Packers were just better on all fronts. And I guess the bigger surprise to me was not that they lost in the fashion in which they lost, obviously was surprising, but that they got dominated at the line of scrimmage as bad as they did on both offense and defense, because that has been something obviously Dan and Brad have kind of preached for this team and how it's built is winning at the line of scrimmage. The youth was shown offensively on that offensive line. I mean, you saw, and Dan mentioned the missed assignments. I went back and watched a lot of the all 22 and you could tell Tate Ratledge.
Yeah.
He had a look. Hey, thank goodness he ain't playing center, because at guard is his natural position and he was missing some assignments. I can only imagine playing center, how much more mental, how much more of a mental battle that would be on top of everything else he has to balance. He's going to get better. Christian Mahogany is going to get better. Graham didn't have a great game. I mean, even Panay at times did not look like himself. It was just it looked like an offensive line that needs to continue to gel. And the unfortunate part for me, just speaking from a fan perspective, is you'd say, well, they have time to just keep gelling. But you look at the schedule and you say, this does not get any easier. Like, it just unfortunately does not. The Bears this week, obviously, the Bears did not look great in the second half against the Vikings. But then you got Baltimore and then you got all these quarterbacks moving forward and great teams. So there has to be an urgency. But I guess that was the biggest surprise to me, is just how much they got dominated at the line of scrimmage. But that comes with the youth, I guess.
Yeah, Dan said something interesting, you know, on Monday, I believe it was, that he, you know, made the mistake of overloading their plates, believing they could handle more than they could. And you hear Jared today talking about every single time he's stepping into the line of scrimmage, he's got two or three plays. And, you know, I saw those two comments to be, you know, overlapping in the sense that, you know, they're coming to the line with two plays and checks and, you know, is Tate processing this? Because that's what you hear all the time with people that come to this offense, particularly from the college level, is the volume of the playbook, just the massive volume of it. And so I think we're going to see, you know, it sounds bad, but just a simplification at some level this week, less of those checks, more straightforward, do what you do best, establish that, and then build on it going forward. And I think that's clearly the right move with all the missed assignments.
Yeah, I think the missed assignment that everyone was talking about most after the game involved Tate Ratledge on that goal line handoff to Montgomery, where he went to block a player that was already blocked and left, I think, Colby Wooden coming downhill unblocked, and Montgomery had to make a miss to avoid the safety. And Decker explained to us today that that wasn't just on Tate Ratledge, that as Decker explained, was a play that the Lions checked into based off of the Packers' defensive front. And so there was a kill at the line. And Justin, this is what you're talking about. They went to the line with two plays in mind, and they checked into one based on the front. And Decker and Tate did not hear the kill or did not get the kill communicated cleanly, whereas Mahogany and Sewell and Glasgow did. So those latter three ran the play they checked into. Tate and Decker ran the original play, and the result, as everyone saw, was disaster. And, you know, Decker was saying, we're going to have to pare down the offense this week, to echo your point again, Justin. He said, you know, there would be times in the past where we'll just call it and haul it. No matter what the defense presents, we'll run the play as called, because we believe in our strength and our ability up front. And I think they're going to have to revert back to that a little bit over these next couple of weeks, even if the talent might not be the same, just to simplify and clean up the communication and trust that if they're all on the same page playing in concert, that they can get the plays executed as they have designed.
I think that's why there's not a lot of panic when you talk to players, and players aren't going to be panicking in week one anyway, unlike, you know, some fans and even some media out there, I guess. But when you hear Taylor talk about those things, and it's like, hey, it wasn't just Tate. Like, I missed that call too. Like, yep. This happened repeatedly through the game. So that's stuff we have to clean up. That's the stuff where Dan, when you hear him after the game, the things that are correctable, that is correctable. Like, just not hearing the call and not having that communicated to you, that's an easy fix. It's not like you're getting bullied up there. I didn't really think there were too many occasions where the Lions got bullied in that game, at least along the offensive line. There's one play in the end in the fourth quarter where Micah Parsons just kind of battery rams his way through that line. That's getting bullied. I didn't see a whole lot of that, though, honestly. I thought all the stuff was – not all the stuff, but a lot of it was just communication stuff. You hold on like a half second longer, give Jared a half second longer to throw a ball. There's one play, I think, maybe in the second or third quarter where Jameson Williams running like a crosser over the middle. Jared, that's a ball he usually rips towards the left sideline. That's a gain of 20-25. But because, you know, the pressure was barreling in on him quickly from the interior, he has to check down to Dave Montgomery for a gain of 6. And it's like, you'll take that. And that's sort of the game that the Lions were playing, knowing the style of defense that the Packers play, how they win with 4, they drop guys in the coverage, they take away those deep shots. Because of that, they were doing a lot of the dink and dunk stuff. And, like, I think that was working for them, not too effectively or efficiently. You can argue that. But there were some drives where they were able to string together with that sort of game. They just weren't able to capitalize in the red zone when they got there. And it's like, if you're going to play that style and you're going to take what the defense gives you, you really have to capitalize in that area of the field. And they just didn't. They went 1-for-4. The one that they scored was a garbage time touchdown to Slaw. So really offensively, they're out of sync. But I think in terms of the offensive line stuff, it's communication, it's technique, it's the little things that are correctable that show up often in week one. And I think that's why there's really not a lot of panic out there in Allen Park right now.
I think that the check down stuff's really interesting, right? Because people hate watching it, but it's sometimes what you have to do. Like, there's no other choice based on what the defense has given you. And I was talking to an assistant coach for a different story this week and just kind of hit on the game after we had wrapped up the interview. And he's like, look, I was with a different team and we played Tom Brady in the playoffs and we did the same thing. We forced him to dink and dunk. And he goes, he killed us all games. He's like, fine, check to the back, check to the back, check to the back. And he goes, it was 10 yards after 10 yards, 10 yards. He was at the end, 48 points. We didn't give up the big play and they put up 48 points. And so we saw the Lions move the ball 3-4 drives in that game, you know, 50, 60 yards, 10, 13 plays. It was the inability to finish. You know, that's what these defenses count on, is eventually you shoot yourself in the foot, whether it's a sack or a holding penalty or something. You make that one mistake and suddenly the drive is killed. You've got to execute 15 times. And that's really, really difficult to do consistently. And, you know, they kind of stalled out several times at 10, 12, 13 plays. And we see the result.
Yeah. And in that environment, when they're operating in the silent count, it's uniquely challenging because you've got Graham who's looking between his legs before most plays to get the ball to Jared. And so he isn't able to make those last minute checks that he would, say, for a home game when he can scan the field and then snap the ball exactly when he wants to. And so when he's not able to account for what the defense is showing, it falls on the guards most immediately to make those adjustments on behalf of the entire offensive line. This is what Decker told me today when I asked him. And look, that's putting a lot on the plate of two players that are essentially rookies in Ratledge and Mahogany. And it doesn't mean that Decker and Sewell on their ends can't make checks or that Jared can't, but most immediately it's on those guards to see what's happening and relay that info to Graham. And I think there were at least a handful of occasions on Sunday where that information wasn't communicated cleanly enough. And let's also credit the Packers guys. Like, they put together a really, really good defensive game plan that involved a lot of motion before the snap that put the Lions offense in flux, and they weren't able to account for it enough times to move the ball down the field and into the end zone. I think there was one play, like a design run to the right, where it was Sam Laporta's job coming off of that edge to pick off Quay Walker at the second level. And I don't know if this was a calculated move on Walker's part and diagnosing what the Lions were going to run, but like a second or two before the snap, he took two or three steps to his left and made it impossible for Sam to get to his road marker and to pick him off on that play. And the play was otherwise pretty well blocked, but Walker shot through the gap that it was impossible for Laporta to get through and took, I think it was Gibbs down for like a loss or a gain of one. So credit where credit's due to a very active and disruptive Packers defense, especially that front seven.
So what you're saying is John Morton in the booth versus John Morton on the field. It's not a 50 point difference. Is that essentially
that's foolish? Said Jared Goff.
Okay. Clarify for the people that just because John Morton is not on the sideline does not make the offense bad. Okay. I just want to make sure that's clear because it seems like that was people's takeaway for whatever reason. But I do want to ask you guys the question, just your overall evaluation. I know it's one game. Of course, you can't really evaluate John Morton or Kelvin Shepard, but you at least can see, just a little bit of style, even though it's still the Lions style and Dan style like you hit on last week, Colton. It's still going to be Lions football, so it's hard to really decipher the difference. But you get to see kind of a new era with John Morton and Kelvin Shepard. What was kind of your guys' overall takeaway from both of those guys in their debut as new Lions coordinators? Because after the game, obviously in the fashion which they lost, I'll tell you one thing, ESPN didn't open up the show with Lions miscommunication errors. I'll tell you that. It's these coordinators stink. That's usually what they're doing. What'd you guys make of those two's debut?
Colton, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's something Dan kind of predicted. I think it was the first day of training camp. He said, look, I know it's coming. We lose the game. It's coming. Our offense has a bad day. It's coming. The defense, you know, gives us some points. It's coming. People are going to talk about our coordinators. I can't control that. That's just the narrative. So I promise you he's not concerned after one bad game. He took ownership of this one, which we know he tends to do after losses. But to me, it came down to execution. I know no one's going to like hearing that. You know, when I watch the game plan, I'm like, I understand. Like the game flow, I think, is one thing versus the game plan that you initially come out with. You want the deep shots. The deep shots were in there. They ran plays to try to target guys downfield. They were covered up really well by a good defense. And I think my takeaway from that was that this Packers defense is uniquely positioned to handle this Lions offense. And I know that's not something people want to hear, but there aren't many teams that can play the style that the Packers play and have success the way they did against the Lions team. I really don't think there's many. And again, some of that was self-inflicted on the Lions end. So it could be better the next time they play around in November, next time they line up. So that's one thing. You know, defensively, I don't like the way they started that game. Brian Branch gets the penalty, throws Tucker Kraft's helmet. I thought that was a little selfish. You know, I thought he kind of made it a one-on-one game there in the first quarter, and it didn't need to be that way. He tends to lose his cool in that building. I thought that really kind of set him back. I know Branch was awesome in that game the rest of the way, but that's a play where like they had a run stop, I think, on the play that he threw the helmet, and then you give them 15 yards for free. And a play or two later, he's scoring in your face and like getting in there and telling you, yeah, I just scored on you. So I didn't love that. I think the early deficit, getting down 7-0, 10-0, 17-3, it just kind of changed the game script where like they had to do whatever was possible to try to move the ball. So I think it was kind of all encompassing offense and defense. There's some communication issues in the secondary with some switches. They had some man beaters in there, like the Jaden Reed touchdown where you had the pick and then gets open free downfield. That's stuff that like you can put into your offense when you know what type of defense your opponent is playing. And they've known this Lions man coverage defense for years. I thought maybe that's a game where you use the element of surprise and switch it up on them, at least for game one. Say, surprise, we're going to do a lot more zone. They didn't really do that. They blitzed a lot, played a lot of man in that game, and the Packers were ready for it, so you got to tip your cap. So in terms of how the coordinators did, obviously not their best, right? Like Dan Campbell said, it was on coaching too. It was on players. It was on all of us. I think it's all-encompassing there. But again, it is one game, maybe a bad matchup, maybe bad timing with people still learning how to play in this level at this league. But I think you just chalk it up to, you know, getting beat and you move on.
Look, I know something about replacing greatness. You know, I had to step in for Tom Kowalski. So I feel all of John Morton's pain, if you will. But you know, Colton points it out, like the communication errors are something I'm more comfortable putting on the coordinators. Like, that is your job, is to have them prepped. And when DJ Reed, a veteran in this league, is still struggling on that opening series with who is his responsibility when two receivers are bunched out of motion, like, that's a concerning after 6 weeks of training camp. When there's a miscommunication between Tate Ratledge and Penei Sewell, that's concerning because you've had 6 weeks to prep. I didn't have a whole lot of problem with the play calling on either side. Clearly some execution concerns, the run game being the biggest among them. I think defensively, you know, I was very curious about seeing the blitz going into this game. Pretty disappointed with how that looked, you know, and if you can't get that working with the lack of kind of interior pass rush you have, Hutchinson getting doubled, like, you're going to have a bad day. You can't cover man coverage in this league without some level of pressure, and they got none of that. And so, you know, the coordinators are going to look worse because of the execution, and maybe you put some of that, you know, strategically on the coordinators. But I'm more concerned about, why was this team, after an extra week or week and a half of training camp, why were they still having the communication errors they were? That is the thing I'm, you know, most bothered by with the job that those two did.
Yeah, it's probably simplistic to say this, but you're not going to hit deep shots if you can't run the ball for more than 2 yards per carry. And the Packers had no reason to abandon those two high safety looks they were in when they also had no trouble snuffing out the run almost every single time the Lions turned to it. So you can blame play calling if you want, even though those downfield shots were in fact called, but it comes back to the ability to run the ball, and it simply wasn't there on Sunday. Defensively, I'll hit on probably one of the main points of frustration for the fans, and I'll be honest, one of the main points of confusion for us watching that game from the press box, which was the decision to drop Hutchinson into coverage on one third and long snap, and on the very next drive to do the same thing with Marcus Davenport. And you guys will also be quick to note that on both of those plays, the Packers converted long gains for first downs. On the play that Hutchinson dropped into coverage on third and six, I think it was Jaden Reed wide open over the middle for an 11-yard gain. And then the play where Davenport at 6'6 and 285 dropped into coverage, it was like a 25-yard gain down the seam. Both of those drives ended in points for the Packers. When Hutchinson was asked about it today, I don't want to say he didn't mince words because he always minces words, but he did not mask his feelings about that play call and how it came to be. He said, yeah, we adjusted as the game moved on. We got out of that a little bit more. So we just happened to be in those positions in that game, which is obviously not the most ideal position. It was very clear that Hutchinson was not a fan of that play call. And when he was asked if that's going to become a core part of what this Lions defense does, he went, I don't think so. So not something to be concerned about moving forward. I also asked Davenport about it. He was a little more diplomatic. He said it's something that he used to do even in New Orleans back in the day, and that he's open to doing anything. But look, man, when you have, as the Lions will be the first to tell you, one of the five elite defensive ends in the NFL, don't overcomplicate it. On third and long in an obvious passing situation, let that guy rush the passer and do the same thing with Davenport, especially when these two guys are coming off of injury and trying to find their flow and their place and their footing still in this defense. One note on Davenport, who simply was not good enough on Sunday. I think a lot of people were disappointed in his performance, given how highly the coaching staff and his teammates had talked about him and how much this front office has banked on his ability to make an impact this year. He was mostly invisible for that game. And when I asked him about it today, he admitted that there were a number of plays where he just didn't go full tilt. Like, he's still trying to find the trust of his own body and his comfort within this defense. You know, he said he felt like too many times he was thinking about doing his job and what that meant for where he should be on the field, rather than just playing full tilt downhill every single snap. I think he expects to be closer to that version of himself on Sunday. Maybe that explains somewhat of the lack of his production. But if they don't find someone to win one-on-ones to a semi-consistent degree across from Hutchinson, they're going to either have to abandon man coverage in the secondary or hope that Hutchinson starts beating double teams at a more consistent rate, because that's the obvious dilemma for this defense after week one.
I looked up a couple numbers just because I was curious. This one about like Aiden and Davenport dropping into coverage. I think Aiden had two coverage snaps and Davenport had one, which says a lot because it felt like they just came at inopportune times.
Yeah.
It felt like a lot more though. And it kind of was kind of glaring when they did it. You're just like, wait, what? Why are they doing that?
Yeah. Go ahead. No, you got it.
Yeah. And then another thing I looked up, just the blitz rate, obviously 47.8% in week one. That was the second highest blitz rate of any team in week one. That overall, their pressure rate was about 26.1, which was the seventh lowest in week one. When the Lions only rushed four, their blitz rate or their pressure rate fell to 16.1%, which would have been the second lowest overall. So like that's kind of what they're working with now. Like yep. They don't have a guy that can win opposite of Hutch, at least not in game one. I'm willing to give Davenport the benefit of the doubt some more time because he is a good player and we saw it in practice. Like he was using his bull rush, winning with power. Mm-hmm. We just didn't really see that in week one. And so I'll chalk it up to maybe his body still, you know, adjusting to being back on the field. But if that's going to be a sign of things to come, it's not pretty. And it kind of goes back to the edge discussion and like, could you use another body there? Cause really they only had three true edge rushers active for Sunday's game. So that, you know, you're playing some guys out of position, you're forcing them to kind of move on the outside. It's not going to look great all the time. The other thing I would say is they were blitzing a lot with their linebackers.
Yeah.
Jack Campbell's not the best blitzing or pass rushing linebacker. They tried that with him as a rookie and it did not go well. And sometimes looked like he was running into a pile and maybe that's what they asked him to do, but did not look super effective. Him and Anzalone, I think had five or six, you know, blitzes in that game and, you know, not super effective. I didn't think. So one thing I did like in the second half is they had a wrinkle where they had Aiden out wide on one side, Davenport out wide on the other, and then Al-Qadim Muhammad in the middle, mm-hmm. along with chaos. And that looked like it worked. I think that was one of the plays that either led to the near interception, or it might have been the branch interception that was called back. I think that was the play. So, like, when you hear Campbell say, we like some of the things we did in the second half, I think he's alluding to some of those wrinkles, and it's, like, just trying to figure out what works. It's still early, and, like, this is the first time Calvin Shepard has had – this collection of talent at his disposal as a DC. So I think he's still learning on the job. And yeah, you could say they weren't passing as much in the second half, but I do think that we saw some good signs from the defense at least. And look, Aiden's not always going to be chipped. He's got to win those one-on-ones when he has them. That's something that he mentioned today. I don't think it'll always look like this. I think he's going to be a lot more active probably starting this week. So I would not exactly press the panic button yet, but some of the issues that we talked about all offseason about depth, do you have enough? I think some of those were at least validated for a little bit.
And
I don't know exactly what Jordan Love's time to throw was. I'm guessing it wasn't very high. He got rid of the ball quickly too, so that was another factor. It's probably an encouraging sign that Caleb Williams is coming to town because Lord knows he'll hold on to it for 5.5 seconds before he gives a couple shots.
Yeah, we love this theory of Kelvin Shepard being super creative, especially with his linebackers. But I didn't, I guess, love the practice of it on Sunday. Like, if you're going to blitz your linebackers, but at the expense of pass rushing either Hutchinson or Davenport, for example, like if the compromise is one of those has to drop into coverage, then I'm not sure that's entirely worth it. So it'll be interesting to see how he uses the blitzing linebackers without subtracting from his defensive line moving forward.
Yeah, I think it would be devastating to struggle consistently winning one-on-ones besides Hutch when you had a guy in the building that was seventh in pass rush win rate. I think that just sucks. And I don't even want to think
who's
about
that?
It, you know? Yeah, you know what? We don't even need to mention his name.
He who must not be named.
I don't even want to mention his name. We might have to start paying the guy like royalties as much as we mention him on not we, but I do as well on my own content. So yeah, you know, it was one of those games I think where Davenport, where I'm not gonna lose faith in the guy. I think we've seen he's a capable player. It's just really health. So if he stays healthy, I have faith he can win those. I thought overall though, the run defense was more positive, especially early on, which is actually a great thing because you don't have your best one of your best, if not your best, run defender in Ali McNeil yet. So I thought they did a really good job with Josh Jacobs. I expected anywhere from 3 to 3.5 yards a carry. I think they got him to right 3.5 yards a carry. I know we got in the end zone, but I thought overall the run defense looked solid. I know the coverage, to kind of go back to what we were talking about earlier, the missed assignments. I know TA was kind of playing through the groin injury, it looked like, for a little bit there. And he got there's two big plays where, you know, he got beat on, and I think he was like, all right, yep, this groin. Yeah, yeah. You know, we're probably going to have to.
Yeah, now my groin hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no, that, I'll love PBU in the end zone. I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm
not
kidding.
The PBU in the end zone. Yeah. Just those two.
Yeah, I still think Kirby was at fault on that long reception. It looked like, I say at fault. Like, I think you give an all-pro safety some ability to ad-lib and read, and to his, you know, he was reading Jordan Love's eyes, but Jordan Love is apparently more advanced than he anticipated and was able to transition and make a read off of Kirby and take that deep shot. But that was a center field play that he left TA exposed, and that was unfortunate for him.
Yeah,
even harder when on the very next snap they run that little pick route and TA gets exposed again, and all of a sudden, it was 17-3 at that point, and it felt like the Packers just kind of cruise controlled from there. I'll tell you what, fellas, that was a tough morning to drop a Terrion Arnold as CB1 feature on the old Twitter platform. I felt pretty good about that one after the first two drives. Went back and looked at those mentions at halftime and was like, I think I might just delete this bad boy. But I will say in Terrion's defense, and by the way, he practiced today, so every reason to believe that he'll play on Sunday. He was playing pretty well, and I know he said this himself, but before the injury, which he said happened on the second drive, he was playing as well as he played through training camp, which was really strong, really sticky, really reliable in run support. And, you know, obviously he had the pass breakup in the back of the end zone on Dobbs. He also forced an incompletion to Dobbs with really tight kind of step for step coverage on the first drive. And then the injury happened. And, he said to cameras that he'll never blame the two plays that he surrendered on the injury. He said more candidly off camera when I asked him if that had any effect on the two throws. What you mean, did it have an effect? Yeah, you saw that post ball. I was finna pick that. Now, we'll see if he was actually finna pick that. But I do think it's worth allowing, if it's worth allowing for the fact that he was a different player after that injury than he was before. And I would just wonder if it's gonna dog him at all moving forward. Like, I mean, he says he's willing to play through it. So you have to believe that they feel comfortable with the kind of player he can be at maybe less than 100%, something to watch on Sunday for sure.
It's the third time I've heard Will impersonate Terrion Arnold in a week, and it's spot awesome on. Every I don't time. Know what else to say. It's perfect.
I love the, you know what I love when Will's back over there, you know, he's over in the Fox Sports studio. He does the, we'll see if he's finna pick that, you know,
what really happened that day.
No, I love it. I absolutely love it. I thought TA, man, he was actually, I would defend him before the injury. He was playing better than DJ Reed. I mean, he was, he looked like the better corner. He looked like CB1. And then after that, it, you know, of course, you know, the injury happens and everything kind of spirals there. But I think the positive you can find in it is, teams. I saw a tweet, by the way, I'm desperate at this point to find positive, anything positive. because you see all the 0-2 stats that come out. It's like, if you start 0-2, the chances of making the playoffs. I saw one tweet. It was like, teams that have started 0-1 have made the Super Bowl. And I was like, okay, now I like this one. Now this is the narrative I like watching. I like looking at these type of tweets. And I think for the Lions, you can give this to Dan Campbell. One thing among others you can say about him is they haven't lost back-to-back in a long time. And he gets these guys ready to play, especially after bad performances like they displayed on Sunday. So if there's anyone you should have faith in getting this ship right, it is a Dan Campbell coach team. So I think there is positive to look for. And I know the Bears, and I didn't want, before we get to the Bears, we didn't really get to talk about JMO's extension. I know it happened on Saturday night. What did you guys make of the extension and just thoughts on that? JMO gets paid. Dan mentioned it today that they were actually trying to get this deal done earlier, and it got done this past weekend at like midnight, by the way. So people, you guys know how this is. you can't do nothing. You can't have a social life. J-Mo gets paid at midnight on a Saturday. So,
Virtue, what were you up to around that time?
I was walking out of Tanner's, which is a bar in Appleton, where I've been watching the end of the Boston College Michigan State game with Woj. We departed maybe 45 minutes after Colton did, and I'm walking back, you know, we're several beers deep, and get the notification, and I was like, I don't know if I can find A from H on my keyboard right now. this is gonna be a challenge, but I locked in, I rallied, as we all did.
That's right.
I don't know about you guys. I was really surprised. And I was surprised because of Brad Holmes' comments at the league meetings back in March, you know, just setting the table for all the extensions the Lions have to get done. And Brad kind of laid the groundwork of, we might not be able to afford J-Mo because wide receivers are crazy expensive. And I thought, you know, that comment was intentionally meant to soften the blow, but maybe it was a negotiation tactic. I don't know, like, you know, putting it out there and letting JMO's people know, like, look, we might not be able to afford you if you're looking for max dollars. And I don't think he got max dollars. You know, I think that's maybe the big takeaway for me. The Lions had 2 years of control. They didn't have to make a move. The money that Williams got on the new end of the deal on average is at the very, very high end of number two receivers, up there with the T. Higgins and the Jalen Waddles of the world. But that's 2 years in the future that money kicks in. That means 2 years of inflation. So $27 million now, the cap keeps going up 10% a year. Now you're talking, that's $27 million a year for what will, you know, essentially be $32, $33 million a year for the guys signing then. So it does end up, I think, looking like or should end up looking like a relative bargain, you know, assuming that there isn't some kind of off-field issue or injury that, you know, hinders J-Mo a couple years down the road.
Yeah, I'm with you, Justin. It really felt like that was, you know, like going back to Holmes' comments, the owners' meetings, it did feel like he was sort of preparing the fan base or whatever just for like, hey, this could happen. But the receivers are expensive, man. These cost a lot of money, these guys. That's what it felt like to me, at least. So I'm with you there. I think the more you got into the offseason and you hear from John Morton saying, I think this kid's going to have a breakout season, and you see him out there and his route running's improved, he's sinking his hips and getting out of his breaks faster, and he's looking more like an NFL receiver. And I know the numbers weren't great the other day, but like just the stuff that you heard all summer, I think is kind of when my mindset started to shift. Like maybe they could find a way to get this done. And then you see the way they structured the Kirby deal, and it's like, they're pretty smart over there in Allen Park. They know what they're doing in the front office. And so, you know, how does it all work when you got Laporta and Branch and Gibbs and Campbell down the road? Like, sure, that's something to worry about. But the way they set this deal up where the money doesn't really kick in until later, and it's like, that's going to be a bargain by the time 2027 comes around. Like, that's I thought it was a really good deal for them, a smart way to get in front of it before he does have maybe a breakout year this year. We don't know, but if he were to replicate last year's production or exceed it in 2025 and you don't have a deal done with him, then I think he has a lot more leverage in that conversation. So to do it now before that happens, I think is smart. It's a bit of a bet, but it's a bet on one of your guys that you've known for years and you've watched grow up in your system. And those are the guys that they're always willing to bet on. And that's something that they've proven over the years. And it was really no different with J-Mo.
Yeah. I think they felt better about J-Mo even before camp, Colton. I think camp was an extension of what he had showed them this offseason when he was here before a lot of the coaches. Now it helps that he lives here. this is what he calls home. But like Scotty Montgomery was saying today, receivers coach, that J-Mo was back here before even he was this offseason in the building, putting in work. He obviously showed a commitment to the program that maybe they hadn't entirely felt in years past. And then to me, this was an example of both sides kind of doing right by each other. J-Mo doing right by the Lions, and that if he had waited another year or possibly two to test the market and continued his current trajectory, knowing that they wouldn't have been able to afford him. If he had played himself in to wide receiver one money in the NFL, it was simply infeasible to have him on this roster. And the Lions doing right by J-Mo in that, for all of his growth last year, this is still a guy who only has what, 83 career catches to his name, and now has an $83 million contract to show for it. But rewarding him for the growth and the maturity that he showed last season and then into this offseason. And it just felt like the right time for both parties to reach an agreement if they wanted to remain wed, so to speak, because it felt like if it wasn't done now, that these two sides were destined for a divorce just because the math would have necessitated it, or the Lions would have had to divorce from one of those other core pieces that we've referenced. So it was good timing and a show of mutual faith between player and organization.
Let me just throw a little math into this conversation. Because the Lions did have the fifth year option with the rookie contract, that was a guaranteed $15.5 million or so for Williams. They'll be able to roll that in. They'll be able to kind of manipulate how the cap plays out for multiple years here. So in reality, the average is a 4-year deal at around $24.5 million. Now you're talking about a contract that's comparable to Michael Pittman, to Deebo Samuel, to Calvin Ridley. If I told you could have J-Mo for that money, for that caliber player, I think it just makes a lot more sense, makes it even easier to digest, as opposed to the very agent driven, I think, 3 years, $83 million.
Yeah, well, I think the deal, how it's structured, it, especially because Brad has been kind of proven he pays guys early, it makes a ton of sense. I think the part where I was a little, and not that you were, not that Brad would be irresponsible to bank on an unknown entity like Isaac Tesla, but you traded up to get a guy like Isaac Tesla, who now gets probably slotted in at wide receiver 3 for the foreseeable future, which I think he has much higher talent than that. But the deal getting done does not surprise me, and the number in which it got done at does not surprise me. So the fact that J-Mo's here, you can't find guys that can run like J-Mo can run. His speed is very rare. So I will give him that. And the money, like you brought up, Justin, it is ridiculous how much receivers. I mean, $24 million for Jameson Williams. He could be a number one receiver on other teams, many other teams. So it is a great deal. I do want to get to the Bears game as well. Before I do that, though, we do have to get to a sponsor of the program here. All right.
Woo-hoo!
Very proud sponsor of the program, which, by the way, let me change this. Okay, there you go. Before we get into that, though, I do need to play this. We will see you guys right after the quick break.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Well, it's Sleeper Fantasy. The NFL season's here, which means you have now a chance to 1,000x your cash on daily fantasy football. I'm in fantasy football. I've taken an L in every single league I'm in, so don't take advice from me. But you can use Sleeper Fantasy and attempt to, bank on players like C.J. Stroud, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Justin Jefferson, etc. Pick on stats for these stars like touchdowns, passing yards, receiving yards, fantasy points, and more for up to 1,000x payout on Sleeper. Get your picks right, and you can win big. Use the promo code HMA. For a chance to get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring the program as always. All right. We
got to get hashtag fade IAfraidy trending on Twitter this weekend. If we all just fade you, bro, we're making money on Sleeper.
fade me on everything when it comes to betting and fantasy, and you will be fine. I promise. every player I took got hurt week one. So that's a whole other thing. I do want to get to the Bears game because on Monday Night Football, we got to see Ben Johnson. All right. In this offense. And it seemed like that was a whole emotional roller coaster because you're watching the scripted plays, which obviously are always going to look nice. You're like, oh, wow, you know, Ben Johnson, the scripted plays. It looks amazing. Everyone's tweeting, oh, Ben Johnson, da-da-da, which I'm a big Ben Johnson guy. But then you look at the second half and you're like, oh, okay. I think Caleb started 10 for 10, finished like 11 of 24 or something like that. He had some rookie coach decisions as well that he kind of messed up late in the game. It was whatever. They ended up throwing the game and losing. They're 0-1. Now they have to go to Ford Field Amon-Ra comes out, says we're going to boo him. You know, Dan's been more diplomatic and saying, no, that's my buddy. You know, I'm sure Ben's kind of replicating that or reciprocating that as well. Kind of like, hey, we're cool. This is a massive game. I mean, take the storyline out of it. Like, who cares? I don't care if it's Ben Johnson or whoever. You are 0-1, all right? And I mentioned the stat earlier that I hate reading, but since 2007, 139 teams have gone 0-2. Only 14 of those 139 have rallied to make the playoffs. Most so recently,
telling Houston, me there's a chance.
Houston, by the way, if I tell you there's a chance, fade it. Don't listen to me. Now, if I say it's not going to happen, you might need to, there definitely is a chance. But what do you guys make of just the importance of this game and the matchup here with the Bears? Because the Lions are the better team going into Sunday. There's no question about it. I think Ben still, he has to kind of establish things as a new head coach. I think the Lions are coming off a kind of an emotional loss. They're going to take all their anger out at home. I don't see the Lions, A, losing back-to-back, and two, losing their home opener. That would be even – that would be a whole – that to me, worse than that Packers loss by far, not only because of who they lost, but because they lose at home. But what's kind of the expectations and feelings heading into Sunday's game against the Bears?
Let me put something – pretty awful into the universe so you guys can clean it up with your positive vibes. But I can't help but think back to 2018 when the Patriots came to town and the Lions didn't have their shit together yet with Matt Patricia. And
yeah,
Matt Patricia had all the answers for Tom Brady because he knew him from practice against him every day for years. And, you know, there's something to be said about Ben Johnson spending every waking coaching moment with Jared Goff for the last 3 years. Like, he knows everything about Jared Goff, and he's going to, you know, be able to pump all that information into the Chicago defense. And so I think the matchup is probably more compelling than we're giving it credit in terms of the on-field. Obviously there's all kinds of great storylines around it, but I think that is the real chess match, is not Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson. It's weirdly Ben Johnson versus Jared Goff, or the information that Ben Johnson gave Dennis Allen about Jared Goff. That's what I really want to see, is if, you know, they're going to throw some stuff at Goff that exposes whatever weaknesses they feel he still has in his game.
That's an interesting one, because I think you're right. Everyone's kind of focusing on the two coaches and how well they know each other and that sort of storyline. But Dennis Allen's a good defensive coordinator here, and Dan Campbell knows him pretty well from their days in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. He's head coach, he's really good in this coordinator spot. I thought they did some good things against the Vikings, and they've got some talent over there. We'll see if they get some guys back from injury, but this is not a talentless defense. I wouldn't say that. So, yeah, having a guy like Ben Johnson that knows everything you do offensively and defensively, I think that's sort of what we're not talking about enough. So I would agree with you, Justin. I think that's an element that not a lot of people are talking about. So good on you for bringing that up. But, you know, still, when I look at this game, the Bears, they were very undisciplined in that game against the Vikings. They had, 12 penalties for something crazy, like 100-plus yards. And it's like, you're at home in that game. And, like, four or five of those were, like, false starts. And I'm like, that really – it shouldn't be, like, a communication issue or whatnot, like, nerves. Like, you're at home. Like, that's in your own building. So I struggle to imagine – what's going to happen if they come here and it's loud as we expect, and that place is going to be rocking, home opener. They're going to be booing Ben Johnson, as Saint so eloquently said. Like, that's going to be a tough environment to play in. You have a new offensive line, and I know some of those guys are vets, but it's like they don't have a lot of experience playing together. And so, like, some of these same issues that we saw with the Lions could show up for this Bears offensive line, which I also did not think had a particularly good game against the Vikings. They kind of struggled. Jonah gave up, I think, four or five pressures in that one. So not great. So when I look at this matchup, I think the Bears have a lot of things to figure out themselves, as much as we want to talk about the Lions right now.
Yeah, I think the curiosity for me on Sunday is, what does this offensive line look like and this run game look like in the comfortable confines of Ford Field, where they don't have to combat the crowd noise that was such a nuisance for them at Lambeau, and they don't have to confront a defense that can create all kinds of havoc just by rushing four. This feels like a chance for the offensive line to get right, and it has to get right, because the team will go nowhere without it. And if Jahmyr Gibbs is going to touch the ball on Sunday as many times as he touched it last Sunday, you would expect him to exceed 100 yards. You would expect him to have an outsized impact on this game. You know, you look back at Sunday and the yards per play were the second lowest of the Dan Campbell era, and the lowest since the 2021 season when this offense looked radically different. So for me on Sunday, it's what does this offensive line look like as a unit, as one, when they have the benefit of playing without crowd noise and the benefit of pre-snap communication? Do they look more like they look, say, in joint practices? I know the one against the Dolphins is obviously the flashpoint for all of us, but even against the Texans, you know, they had plays where they looked like themselves over the past couple seasons. So back in a more comfortable setting, does this O-line perform the way we've come to expect them to, even with two newcomers up front?
Colton, you complimented my point. I want to compliment yours on the Bears offensive line, right? Like, they struggled at home. Well, you know, for all the veterans they acquired, it's still three new starters in spots for them. It's two young offensive tackles, and it's going to be a road game in a complex offense. So it's going to be, you know, certainly interesting to see how that unit, which struggled at home, performs in a very loud four-field environment that once forced, I think, I don't know, what was it, 7-8 false starts against the Bears in that famous 2011 game?
Yeah, 30 years. Yeah, I think this Bears matchup, one, needs to be a statement game for not just the storyline of Ben, but more than that. I think just the, you know, fans are going to panic and do their thing. But the reality is they need to go out there and act like they're the Detroit Lions and they are, and the Chicago Bears are the Chicago Bears. The Bears are they're not in a rebuild stage of their franchise with Ben Johnson. You are looked at as one of the best NFL teams. They need to go out and show that on Sunday. And I think Dennis Allen, what he did against Kevin O'Connell in the first half was really impressive. So to kind of what you were saying about Jared Goff, there's no doubt the familiarity with both coaching staffs. It's going to be interesting. I don't know who has the advantage, to be honest. I think they all do. But you'll see it on Sunday when it's done that I think the more experienced team is going to come through with a victory. I want to get into kind of final scores and final thoughts before we end the show here. And I guess I'll throw out what I think is going to happen. I think the Lions win this game by a score. I guess if you throw in a 2-point conversion, I have the Lions winning this game 31-23. I think they crack 30 points at home against the Bears. And then the narrative on Monday is probably going to be, well, maybe John Morton doesn't stink. It might shift back a little bit. So that's how I foresee it happening. I think communication on the offensive line improves. I think the run game gets back to what they've been doing. They're not going to run for 2 yards a carry again. I just don't see it. And then I think the defense is going to be flying around and kind of show more of that pressure look that they wanted to show against the Packers and get more pressure and more sacks against Caleb Williams. So I got the Lions winning this one and cracking 30 points at home on Sunday.
It's a lot of points, and I don't know if I feel confident going from, we can say 13, but I'm going to say 6 points to 31, because I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock in that last drive outside of the amazing to slot catch. I think more realistically, this might be kind of a grinded out game. I think back to the Bears home game last year where they needed to just squeeze that out and needed some Caleb dumb mistakes to really ensure that they won that one. I don't think people are going to love it, but I'm going to go 2017 Lions.
I like that. I struggle with this one because I see all sides, right? I see all sides. Like, you got Ben Johnson knowing everything about this organization. The Lions know some things about Ben. Bears are still figuring some things out. Lions are still figuring some things out. So I don't think I can go in the 30s. I think I'll go 24 to 20. And I think I might have said the same thing last week, so I'm probably just stealing my own take from the Packers game.
But it's going to be
24-20 right every week.
I'll just keep doing it every week until I get it. How about that? 24-20. Lions.
Love it. To make my prediction or to at least preview my prediction, I'm bringing in Dan Miller. Come over here. We got the one, the only –
the voice of the Lions in the house.
Let's go.
Dan Miller, first of all, welcome to Lions Collective. It is an honor to have you on
this
here.
This is awesome.
We're previewing.
Like an Actors Guild feed, right?
Yeah. Nothing from Sleeper, though. That's divided four ways, not five. Hey, Dan, what are you looking for in Sunday's game to assure you that this Lions team is back on track?
Well, they got to get off the field on third down. And I think if I look at that game, I look at that first drive where you had third and six, third and nine, third and 10. You put that team exactly in the position that you wanted to put them in, yep. And you didn't get off the field.
Yep.
And that's a huge boost for them, and it's a huge, you know, negative for your defense. They gave up another third down, then didn't give one up the rest of the way. Got to run the football a little bit. Everything this team does is keyed off that run with those playmakers. And once they do that, that loosens up the defense, and we know what Jared can do after that. So it basically is just let's get back to them playing. We know the Lions are capable of playing. They were number one defense in third down last year. You got to get back to somewhere close to that.
So you're saying on third down, don't drop Hutchinson and Davenport into coverage.
Hutchinson already apparently put an end to that. We're good with that.
I think Hutch might have the headset on Sunday, making those calls himself on third down.
Although maybe they remember Hutch dropping back in his rookie year.
That is true. Yeah, when he hand by the sideline.
Exactly right. He looks so smooth. So.
Yeah. Well, hey, Daps, thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you,
man. Hey, and catch him in about 4 minutes on the Fox 2 live stream. I'll be there, too. We'll be talking shop, all things Detroit sports. I mean, how can I follow that? I'll just echo everything Dan Miller said. No one wants to hear from me or see my face anymore.
What a cameo. That was awesome.
My box just got vastly less interesting. I'll echo whatever everyone else has said. I think this is – a get right game for the Lions offensive line, most specifically. And I think they come out with a real intention to run the ball, not to quiet any outside noise, not to subdue the narratives, but just to prove to themselves and especially those young guards up front that they can run this offense the way they have run this offense and the way they want to continue to run this offense. And that starts with, 4.5 to 5 yards per carry almost every time you drop back and hand it off. So I like the Lions to win this game rather comfortably in the end. I'd say 28-18 Lions 1-1 on Sunday, back to 500, baby.
Hey, really quick, buzzer beater over under. Collective fourth down tries between these two teams. 5.5.
Collective punts, 0. No punts allowed.
Yeah, but I think the only thing that can make me more happier, to be honest, besides a win, I need a Dan Miller audio book. Can he read some books for me?
I think he's on is it Cameo where you can get someone to record a specific line. I think he's on there. Look him up. I mean it's gonna cost you probably this entire week's paycheck, but it's well worth it.
Worth it. So worth
hey,
it.
Hey, Sleeper, let me talk to you. All right, let me talk to you for a second. Appreciate you all as always. Hit the like button on the way out. You guys can check out our social media platforms. It's in the description as well as the channel description. We'll be back next Wednesday, but until then, from the fellas at Over Lions Collective, we appreciate you. See ya.